Thank you so much, all. Very welcome to the Tommy Tiernan Show, chat show where we don't know who the guests are until they walk out. Except, I always know that to my left is the most beautiful. Please give a huge round of applause for the gorgeous Fred Cook.
Thank you.
Myself and Fred, we finished off our island tour this week. Lovely old time, wasn't it, Fred?
Amazing, yeah. Inishman was my favourite because there's no one on it. We were the only two people there.
Well, we've discovered in our travels on the islands that no matter where you go, there's always somebody from Dublin. Oh, I love it out here on the islands. Oh, it's amazing, Tommy. I love it. It looks so quiet out here on the island. I come here every summer for 15 years. I come now for the quiet time. I love the peace and quiet. Do you love the quiet out here on the island, Tommy? It's lovely and quiet the whole time. I love the quiet on the island. There was a... We were on Inishir, which is gorgeous. If you think of the three Aran Islands, I don't know how familiar you'd be with them, but if you think of them as three sisters, Inishir would be the cute one. Inishmore would be the big one. You'd have to visit her a few times before you see the length of her. And Inishman would be the strange one. Do you know, the one that hasn't learned to put on her makeup right and... always very quiet. But there's a fierce amount of Irish spoken on, particularly on Inishir and Inishman. And I don't think you actually have to understand Irish to be able to understand Irish. if your ear is half cocked at all, you'll pick up enough information. There was a coffin brought onto one of the islands there, and two owl boys leaning over the pier, you know, chatting about who'd ever passed, and I was leaning toward them to get a listen, and I got as much information as a man would need in a situation like that, Fred. I heard depression. And then the other fellow went, I'm gonna cut out a bastard putchy. So between the bastard putching and the depression, so what hope did he have, like? So Inishman was your favourite out of the load?
Yeah, well, it's nice because my phone didn't work, so it was a complete break. You know, like, you could never have a horror movie in Inishman because you'd have this lovely lady on her own in the kitchen and she'd be like, boom, boom, hello, who's speaking? And she'd hear, I'm inside your house, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you. And then she'd be like, sorry, the reception's very bad, could you speak up if you don't mind? I'm inside your house, I'm going to kill you. Is that Dermot? I'll pick you from the ferry. Stay there, you're great.
We do... the summertime in Ireland is a fantastic time to be travelling along the west coast of the country. It's beautiful, and I would often be driving through Sligo. And it's a very strange thing in Sligo because Yeats is... epitaph, William Butler Yeats, the poet, his epitaph reads, cast a cold eye upon life, upon death, horseman pass by. Now, that's just a kind of a Protestant way of saying, leave me alone. And the way Sligo County Council have reacted to this request by the poet is by putting up huge signposts all over the county going, he's buried over there. But Yeats played a fantastic trick in them because it's been revealed today that it's not him in the grave, that he died in France and the French sent somebody else. A fella who didn't even like poems. So Yeats is buried in New Zealand and he's loving it. Loving the peace and quiet. And I had a very interesting, I don't know how you feel about these boys, Fred, but on Monday, in Gaillia, in Galway where I live, I was asked to do, there's the Galway girl there now, sick of people singing about her. And only one of her eyes is blue. She's like a sheepdog, you'd see, in Mayo. picturing David Bowie heading her. One blue eye, one brown one. I got asked to do a gig for the Irish rugby team. And so the whole load of them were gathered in a hotel room in the G Hotel, a fine hotel, fine posh hotel, fine fancy hotel. You could be anywhere, or you could be in the moon in the G Hotel. Fine place. So I did a gig for the Irish rugby team on Monday. Lumps of men. Fine men. Oh, fine men. The backs are, they're the fellas who do like the running, the fast running, you know. They're normal shape. Mm. You know, they're like you, Fred, yeah.
I used to be rugbying myself in the day and, sorry.
No, there's people listening to the radio now Googling Fred Cook images. They want to know why these people are laughing. The backs, the Tommy Bowes and the Rob Carneys of this world, they're fine men, aren't they? Fine shapes of men, and they look athletic and handsome, and they're a pleasure. Even if there was no ball, you'd be looking at them, do you know? But the fellas going to the scrum, I don't know now. They're the wrong shape at all. They're kind of, and they weren't born that way. And if they did, their mothers wouldn't have survived it. They're blocks of men, aren't they? They're like minions. They're so square. Their ears are on their shoulders, like they're just squat. With Paul O'Connell at the back of them, driving the minions. Who on, minions? Who on, drive it? And it's a fine game, but I have a suggestion, which I'm going to push in writing to the IRFU. One of the great things about soccer is that the ball is always slightly out of control, isn't it? And that's the amazing thing about soccer. You're trying to control something with parts of your body that don't really suit it, you know?
Like yourself.
Yeah, like you, Fred. And, but rugby, the ball is kind of, it's in your arms and you're running and you're thumping, and a lot of times it's hard to tell who has the ball and stuff like that. So I think rugby, a fine game as it is, like, would be even more interesting and more exciting for viewers if instead of a ball, it was Kylie Minogue. Imagine Rob Carney just throwing Kylie Minogue to Tommy Bow, throwing her back to Johnny Sexton, and he drops her between the posts. Anyway. Fingers crossed, you never know, they might...
Wouldn't be much difference between the rugby pitch and coppers.
No. Anyway, so that was how we spent the week. And I'm very excited. It's very hard to know how to prepare for this because you can't. So I don't. So Fred, who's up first for us?
Our first guest, Tommy Tiernan, is the wonderful Mr. Ryan Tuberty!
This is like the... This is a strange one now, isn't it?
You know, people come up to me all the time and say, I like you, but I don't know who you are. And I explain to them, come on the Tommy Tiernan show and you'll find out a little bit how it's like, what it's like to be at the receiving end. I'm going to shut up now.
No, I'd like to, like the rest of the country, Ryan, have a few questions for you that now is the perfect opportunity to throw them out at you. How bored are you doing the Late Late Show? If you're as bored as the rest of us, then you should get out of it quick.
I'm sorry, I had to ask,
right?
I'm now beginning to realise why I thought so long and hard about coming here today.
I'm only serious. Now, I have... And this is not a place for seriousness. McSavage.
Yeah, my
David,
cousin.
David, the cousin. You've never had him on.
No, it's funny. McSavage is, if you don't know, David McSavage is my first cousin. Tall, angular, big nose, full of themselves, and it's a strong gene in the family.
Yeah. And it's an amazing dynamic to have in the family.
Yeah.
You on one end, like the ultimate professional.
Oh, well, yeah.
Careful, considerate.
On occasion.
Kind.
Sometimes.
Wise. You've got a very generous disposition.
Well, hang on, where are you reading that off?
You get on well with children, you're mad for jumpers.
I'm a dibble for the Gansey, I have to say.
Oh, who for Gansey?
Who for Gansey?
And David then, who I have a fierce amount of respect for as a comic voice, wild, brave, unpredictable, as dangerous now as putting your drink from a hot water bottle in Carna.
Actually, the more you think, the more one of us has to be adopted. I mean, in fairness, I don't know who, but...
But you've an amazingly strong family as well. I mean, a lot of political heads in it and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, I just finished reading my granddad's book, actually, a book called Dublin Made Me back in the late 70s about, you know, his life in working in, or at least fighting in the Civil War and the War of Independence and all that kind of thing. And I was thinking, God, you know, even his sense of humour and what might catch his eye or what might make him interested in the world. Yeah. And that travels, that interest in the world or the country, that gene travels. And it just then goes into unpredictable wild hot water bottle full of Puccin or Johnny Chacho.
Yeah.
I don't know what he'd make of me, but I suppose we're very curious family. We're just interested in the world and in people, I think, anyway.
Are you a bit of a historian as well? Like,
No, I'm a spoofer. I love history, but I love reading history.
Yeah.
But I'm not a historian.
But you wrote a book on Kennedy.
I wrote a book on Kennedy JFK, and when I told a friend of mine I was doing that, he said, oh, great, I look forward to colouring it in. And being honest with you, that's what it is. It's a glorified colouring book that I'm very happy with because it was like a big essay with pictures and for
I'd
school.
I'd say you did very well in the Leaving Cert, Ryan. Did you?
No,
I'd say you did very well.
No, I got about 22 points. In
exactly,
the
very well.
and I went on to study arts. You know, like I mean, I wasn't going around. I liked college and everything like that, but I wasn't the brains of Ireland by any means. No.
Is there part of you? Because we're about the same age.
Imagine. You're being generous to yourself there. there'd be a couple of years in it,
All right, okay.
Yeah. Which is a huge gulf when we're teenagers.
Yeah, of course, yes. Yeah, a couple of important years by the sound of it.
To me, anyway. And,
do you feel on the late that, because remember when Gabo was coming towards the end, he was also a producer.
Mm.
So are you in any way, I've often thought about, you know, somebody walking out here and doing the show and stuff like that, and because it's unprepared and because it's off the cuff and stuff like that, and you'd be asking questions that'd be at the top of your head as opposed to be at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be aware that sometimes, because it's quite casual, that you might be asking somebody to say something that in the context of the two of us having a chat is ordinary and easygoing.
Yeah.
But there's bad bastards out there. There's bad, I call them journalists. there's thin-spirited pig spirits out there.
And I'd like to welcome them here today. Thank you for coming, and there'll be a little goodie bag on your way out the door.
Who'd only be dying for you to say something that they could turn into a headline. So I'm not trying to seduce you into that at all.
But it's funny.
Genuinely.
The 24-hour news cycle is intriguing because it's gone into craziness whereby if you go online to any modern newspaper site in a given day in Ireland, I could say something on the radio show or to a journalist or whatever, and it could suddenly become a headline for about 2 hours. And then it's gone again.
And has that happened on the late late?
Yeah, it happens in everything. I mean, whatever you say, when you're the guy who does the late late show, you tend to be maybe looked at a bit more or picked up a little bit more. But that's fair enough. That's part of the gig. I mean, you learn to develop a fairly thick skin early on.
Do you? Yeah, do you not? I sometimes think when people are writing.
It took me a while, I'll be honest with you. I know, yeah. I understand your skepticism. I mean, it did take me a while to stop being so self-regarding and Ryan, sort of thin-skinned.
It's not self-regarding.
A little bit.
It's being hurt. It's sometimes people who write about specifically about you.
I was hoping you wouldn't go there.
No, sometimes I think all of us maybe who talk for a living or something like that, we can end up talking about people slagging someone. And when you're slagging someone, you'd hope in comedy that people take it very generously. But I think in journalism that there can be people who start to treat the person. There's great care in Irish people, and we have great hearts, and we're more or less decent.
Yeah.
And I think what's been encouraged, or what's happening now, is a kind of, there's a nastiness out there where when you start writing about other people, you start viewing them as an object. So if you're writing about Ryan Tiernan or Joe Duffy or Katie Taylor or Tommy Tiernan, and there's a kind of a useless viciousness in it. Useless because it does none of us any good.
So if it concerns you, you know, that much, and it did for a while for me, I would say don't be in the business. Because it's the nature of the business is that you're going to be written about, you're going to be slagged, you're going to be mocked. And if you don't want it, go and work in the bank and work behind. You know what I mean? I don't mean...
I can see the headlines already. Tuberty's off to AIB.
Point is, I don't mind, so I'm going to stick with my gig. But no, what's happened is that, it can be a bit bilious and a little unpleasant, but that's because there's more places for people to be bilious or unpleasant. That's because there's now, between blogs and news sites and online and comments underneath articles, it's everyone can have their... There's a lot of white noise. And you can choose to read everything, or you can do pretty much what I do, which is get on with the job. Don't read a lot of the stuff.
When did it stop bothering you? And what type of stuff did they write about you that you were kind of, did it almost break your heart, some of it, kind of going, I wish, why are they being so nasty? I'm making an effort here. What I'm trying to do isn't, I'm not the head of a government. Yeah. I'm not, I haven't absconded with millions.
Yes.
I haven't rode the country sideways.
Yeah. All huge ambitions of mine. So, one by one.
That's another Sunday World headline. Tuberty said to the country, I'd love to ride you sideways.
I'll have to say, Tommy, it's a very attractive country.
It is, yeah.
Especially after a few drinks.
She's on the broad of her back at the moment.
In any way,
yeah,
but what's the question?
No, Ryan, there's no question, there's only noise.
That's my point.
So, in terms of how do you develop the thick skin then? How do you protect yourself against that? As a technique.
I'll tell you, well, actually, it's strange. It's not actually a technique. It's very straightforward. One is turn 40 is always a good thing to do because you become a lot less worried about...
Needy, is it?
Yeah, a lot less needy. That's a good word for it. Two, look at your kids a little bit more for a little bit longer because that's humbling and that's gorgeous.
And
important. And then you suddenly realise there's a vast amount of utterly unimportant comment and noise, and really for me are people listening, and are they watching? Watching the Late Show, are they listening to the radio show? And if that's happening professionally, great, but actually the pursuit of happiness for me is not prioritised by work. It's about the important stuff, and that is, you know, as I say, kids and other things that make you happy, like in life, small things.
Were you surprised by the pressure of the Late when?
Yeah, a little bit, because it was a big gig. I mean, I remember at the time there were about three people in the running for it, and
who could we had, Ryan?
I'd love to be able to to appease you, but unfortunately you weren't one of them.
Ah, no, it wouldn't suit me at all. It would not suit
no,
me at all.
No, I know. That's what they all say. until they're asked to do it. I was doing a show called Tubridge's Night. It was a Saturday night program. I was having a ball, and then this thing came along, and whereby it was out of the blue, and they said, do you want to, you know, they asked, there was kind of informal chats about it with bosses and so on.
Wow.
And then they said to me, I remember the words exactly, were, you got the gig.
Wow.
And I was just suddenly had in my head was, you know, Gay Byrne and Pat Kenny and the Late Late Show and the Bloody Owl that follows you around everywhere, I can tell you.
Yeah.
You'd love this. It's a big porcelain owl I got you. I was like, thank you. I'll put it down in the owl shed. I know, but people are very nice, but it's a lot of owls. In my life...
You said that through gritted teeth.
I know. It sounds very ungrateful, but I got the job, and it has been, yeah. Initially, it was there's a honeymoon sort of high,
yeah,
and then there's the, oh, how long we got him for? How long we got this teacher for this class for?
Yeah,
I think that the people were saying the people. That's very Nixon, isn't it? The people were saying, but the people.
Yeah, that historical humour doesn't wash with these lads, right?
And then you get into it, and now I love it.
Really?
Yeah,
great.
It took me out. There was a little dip at one stage where I was just trying to find my feet a bit and come to terms with all, and now I adore it.
What's your favourite part of an interview?
I'd say when my favourite part is when the guest and hopefully me are turning around and realise that we've completely departed from all expectations of the interview. That's my favourite bit. For neither of us are in a place that we expected to be.
Wow.
And it goes there. And I think, like, I'm starting season 7 of The Late Late Show in September. And as it goes along, I want all the those barriers that constructs that go with chat shows to break down further and further, which is why I wanted to do this, because I love the idea of not knowing who's coming on. I love that free form. I'd much rather that. I'd like interviews to be with people who are particularly engaging people to be longer. I'd like to be able to say, stop the, you know, hold the ad break for a second. This is really good. You know, that kind of constraint. And it's funny, I was just finished reading Michael Parkinson's autobiography, because I like to read what real chat show hosts, you know, think about the world. No, but I prepared, like, he did it for so many years, and it's all the pitfalls and the highs and the lows and all the humanity of it and the so-called celebrity. And when you strip it all down, it's just two punters having a chat.
Yeah.
I've got ideas that I'd love to pursue to make it a little more, little less constructed.
Yeah,
it's one of the last chat shows in the world, I understand, that is fully live.
Yeah,
and that goes over an hour and a half. I mean, it's a long old show, and it's 32 weeks of it. So you know, it's a hard old machine to keep cranked up. But you know, I've got good people around you, and you just keep going at it.
Do you have a say in guests?
I'd say my involvement on that front would be a tipping point scenario. So they'd say, look, we're half thinking about this person. I'd say, forget about it, or please have that person on.
Okay,
so yeah, I could, but I'm not in a producer role at that level.
But if you were,
I'd like to be.
Of course, without Gabo, and I remember he was the producer of The Late Late as well. So
yeah.
It's only when you're doing that you're going to, otherwise you're going to be banging your head off a corporate wall, aren't you?
It's possible, but you know, don't forget the Gay Byrne Late Late Show was such a different time. I mean, it was literally two channels, maybe three.
Yeah.
And there was more of a freedom of who's coming over and things like that. It's just so much more competitive. I mean, how many digital channels, what's online, all this kind of thing. It's a different world.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do try and influence, if you can, what's coming on. And
the thing, I suppose, is if you enjoy it, if you find something that you genuinely enjoy, as opposed to something you have to do to pay the bills, then that joy transmits.
I hear what you're saying, and I think you're being nuanced in what you're saying a little bit. Are you? Or are you being blatant? I don't know.
Nuanced County Meath. is nuanced the French for Navin?
It is now. It is now.
Anyway, sorry, look, no, that's it. We, like I said, we wish you the best of luck for Series 7. And thank you so much for being so generous and so brave and coming out here to talk to this brat. Ladies and gentlemen, Ryan Tubridge.
Thanks, Tommy.
We'll take a short break. See you after the ads.
Our second guest, Tommy Tiernan, is the wonderful Brona Gallagher!
Gorgeous girl. Brona, how are you? Thank you so much for coming on. I was somewhere recently looking at a photograph of you, and it was somewhere strange.
Jail?
No, it wasn't jail. But what they were talking about was your band,
yes,
and your singing, and I can't for the life remember where it was, but they were full of unending praise.
Thank you.
For your Kjol. What do you do? What's your, is it a blues band or soul or?
It's soul, it's soul music, which I love, and I have always loved.
Are you Derry?
Derry City, aye.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tough town.
Tough town.
Tough town.
Good people. My parents are here, so you need to be taking it handy there.
There was a, if you ever visit like Belfast, which would have a mainly Protestant county council,
yes,
city council, and Derry, which would always have a
nationalist,
council. And I always say, if Protestants in the north are ever worried about what a united Ireland might do to Belfast, they should just go to Derry. Litter everywhere, drunken young ones draped over railings and stuff.
You'd have it no other way, really.
It's a tough old town, Derry, isn't it?
It is a tough town. It's, you know, I think we're tough people for the right reasons. And I think yous were talking about their journalism and how people are represented. And I think when you actually really slice into the core of what people have to say and how people are represented, two very different things. And I think one reason why people think that there's an aggressiveness to Northern Ireland people, and obviously I've lived in Dublin 25 years, and there is a spike to our people that the other people in Ireland have, but there's a definite, no, listen to me, I have to say something, because for so long people couldn't hear what we had to say. So Derry obviously is, the majority of Derry people are from the Catholic background, nationalist background, only slightly, and obviously different in Belfast. Mm-hmm. So we do have a sense that you will hear what we have to say, because no one ever in the broadcasting world gave us that voice, you know. And I think obviously outside of Ireland now and over in England, people realise a lot more now what actually happened in Derry and who the people are. But there's a great sense of democracy in Derry as well. You know, there is, I think, the intelligent humanitarians that are involved in politics and social politics, which I would have sort of thrown myself into, social development really more than politics. They are very much, they have democracy at their heart. They're not anti-violence and they're not anti-oppression, re-oppressing, you know, or counterproductive to what people have been through.
Is there a sense in Derry now that you'd never say that any struggle is over?
My.
But is there a sense slightly that people who were defined by a kind of a military war footing, that's been, in as much as it can be, removed from the situation, that those people are now like, they're like fellas trying to ride a ghost. there's nothing to. Do you know what I mean? They're all of a sudden, they're like, that the war is over, and they're kind of like, I want to hit someone. Are there people who are lost because the war is over?
Very much so, aye.
So what do they do?
They still struggle on and they still fight, but there's nothing really left to fight for.
What do we want? Change. Why? Sure, look, we're out, we're walking.
I mean, I look at it as, you know, I don't understand a lot of it, but I think if you look at any family unit, right, human beings, you know, this is where we're getting down to the brass tacks, human beings. If you look at any family, you will have the love there, you'll have the respect there, and you'll also have the dysfunction. And you'll have ego, and you'll have clashes between certain members of the family, certain people. So that's the essence of human beings and coordination and relationships. So that is just the bigger picture when it comes to a schoolroom, a business, then you get into politics. And that's basically, you have people that says, well, you did that on me, and you said that, and you said that. So that is what our default, I think, our dysfunction is as human beings, that we have a memory. A memory can be lethal as well as it can be incredibly educational and bring us forward to proper new ways of living.
So pain, but
pain you can't forget. Pain, yeah. And a lot of the time, unfortunately, the sad thing is, you have a history of military involvement there now in Northern Ireland. You have people that have spent a long time in prisons when the war really got nasty.
So they should be used to the dole, really.
Well, the dole, right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But the thing about it is, you know, how do you deal with people then that maybe their parents were in prison and their yeah. families were in prison? How do you say to a young flit, 16, when he's big enough to, you know, get out and fight and do things, you know, in the very, very sad ways that things have turned out now, when maybe both his parents were in prison for 25, 30 years, he didn't have a relationship with his daddy. So that's, I think, you're dealing with trauma.
Yeah.
That's the heavy. It's post-colonial, or it's post-conflict, you know, and that's why I've often seen people in Derry and met people in Derry that it's post-conflict, and that's what you got to remember. People say, fucking, he's all need to wise up and get over it, you know, boo-hoo. But you can't say that to a certain family that have had absolutely horrific, traumatic times. Yeah. On every side, I'm talking to people, not just in Northern Ireland, I'm talking about people all over the world and young people that joined the British Army and didn't know what they were getting into. You know, who wants to send their child off into an army? What's that about, you know? So it's rethinking the whole structure, you know. We have to just learn. There's a beautiful thing in Buddhism that somebody told me recently about my friend Claire that plays bass in my band, actually, and I'll leave all the heavy stuff after this. And he said, shorten the pause. I hope I get this right. Lengthen.
It's one or the other.
It's one or the other. But it's really good. It's worth waiting for. Hold on. Lengthen the pause between wanting something and making it give you satisfaction. And in between that is now take your handy.
No.
In between that
is... There's a lot of men that could use that as the lovemaking technique.
I know. That's what it boils down to. So do you know what I mean? It's just suspend the reaction. And that's the key. That's spirituality. And
there'll
that's
be women on the broad of our backs tonight.
Hold
shouting.
On there, will you, Tonto?
Lengthen the pose. Lengthen the pose. Lengthen the pose.
But that's it. And that's what it's all about. That's what's wrong with this country.
Look at... Instead of the "you are now entering free Derry" mural as you enter that beautiful part of the world, you know, big sign on the side of that White House, lengthen the pause. We did a tour of Ulster, which to me is an amazing, it's hard to know what to call it, you know, it's 9 counties and it's a province. 6 counties and it's a country.
It's
shrinking and getting bigger. And
lengthen the pause, Thomas. Lengthen the pause, love.
I'm all about the pause, about the pause, about the pause. No trouble. And it's only when you like. I would have been riding around it on the motorbike, and it's a beautiful part of the island, like so lush and gorgeous, and it's just I was blown away by that. I was also we did every county. We did Fermanagh. Fermanagh is a mighty county. Fermanagh has a great effect on Cavan.
Aye.
Fermanagh kind of calms Cavan down. Armagh has an awful effect on Monaghan. The Monaghan boys are just hyped up. One of the things I noticed about being up there and stuff like that and watching Gerry Adams, and this is a thing that mightn't work well on the radio, but it seems to me that the way Gerry talks, it's like, they're not his teeth. And he kind of hasn't got used to them yet, and he's kind of...
Number here, you want to ring him and tell him?
I have a sneaking suspicion that Gerry got them teeth from America, and
they that was all the years the British Broadcasting Society wouldn't let his own voice be heard in the radio, so he learned how to lip read properly, so he was really accentuating the fact so people could actually see what he was saying. I'm actually not saying that, that's not what happened. So I think that's what it is.
I think his teeth are spies. I think Gerry Adams' teeth work for the CIA. What was the... in terms of... apart from the whole... the political definition and the struggle and the war footing and the sadness created from oppression, when you're a young one growing up in Derry, where was the fresh air? It obviously was, I'm guessing, I'm being presumptuous now, but music and acting, was that where you relaxed and found crack?
I mean, when he says where was the fresh air, well, we bordered Donegal. So Donegal was where the fresh air was, on Green and Avaelach. We got to the Bronze Age fort that I actually brought Nationwide, the lovely TV programme that explores different, you know, parts of Ulster.
You're better than Nationwide, Brona, I have to tell you.
I'm looking for my own show. I'm after doing their tires on Ryan Tuberty's car there, so I'm hoping that I'll get their late show in September. But
Nationwide is for old people.
No, I'm going to amalgamate the two. So I took them up to Green, and they were saying, oh, it's pretty far out, you know, for actually to drive up there, if you take you around the bog side and round Derry, you know. So, but taking them round the bog side, it was just hysterical because, you know, if you go out, like, I'm not joking, I know everybody in the bog side and they all know me. And if I don't, my man and dad know them. So I actually can't walk around the town with my mother because it's like walking around with Nelson Mandela. Everybody knows who she is. So if you have to get to the bank or something, it takes about 2 hours. And it's just like, you have to say, no, you're not coming. Say to my man, me and my dad's going, you're staying in the house. Because there's like celebrity. They always wear, like, nothing to do with me or anything like that. But no, we were going to Donegal. We would walk up to Greenan. So it's about a 14-mile walk up under the Bronze Age fort. It's there on maps since the time of Ptolemy. So I took RT up there and they said they couldn't believe it. So that for us as kids, we'd walk just up the back roads and, you know, they do that. But definitely music,
And was there a feeling of jealousy going heading off to Donegal and then with their big kind of free state dole and entitlement and kind of and you're travelling back across the river to live under military occupation. Were you jealous of Donegal or relieved that it was there?
No, I mean, Donegal was, a lot of parts of Donegal are so rural and they were more cut off than, you know, they were worse off than a lot of parts of Derry and that. But no, funny, I just want to tell you that when we used to go to, you know, Donegal at the weekend, you would drive down to Boncranagh or Inishowen or Lisfannan and you'd always get Sidona and Tato. You know, that was the big, you know, the crack, like, you know, in a Milky Way or something. And I love that thing about Irish people. Do you ever notice? Maybe it's just not Irish people. And I watch it because I don't drive and I've never learned to drive. But do you ever notice Irish people? They get on the bus, right, and all of a sudden the wains and this whole thing. So I have, like, you know, I have an encyclopedic mind on the Ulster bus and Bus Éireann, right, going up and down and watching it and human behaviour. And it's like all of a sudden, as soon as we get on the bus, we're going to start eating sugar and shite. And they reached out, okay, you ready, Michal? And they reached out and it's like, rah, 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 and they bring up like 75 bags of chipsticks. 85 bottles of Sidona. And they just eat for 4.5 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, and then they're like, sit down and relax. Yeah, you're mental. He's just had crack. You've got these wee kids like running around the bus going mental. So I don't know if it's, does anybody else do that? It's just the Irish. And now we give our kids an overdose of sugar. Yeah.
And there's no, the thing about chipsticks is there's no swallowing in them.
No. Like. And they make your tongue stick.
You're just as,
they should work for, like, you know, when you anaesthetise people, we need to get to the back of the throat, okay, 6 bags of chipsticks. Because your tongue sticks.
It's a wonder you didn't do that in Pulp Fiction when you're trying to save your man, put the adrenaline into his heart.
I need 3 bags of chipsticks.
That was mental.
To get him going. So the music scene in Derry when you were growing up, what style of music were you attracted to, and what type of music do you play now and do you perform?
We play soul. I mean, it is. My mum and dad are here. And it's great. And it was, there wasn't so many gigs because obviously the troubles were very bad, right? But what my mum and dad had was a really extremely eclectic, brilliant collection of soul music. And because Derry was a poor town, all the bands used to come, all the great show bands would, you know, come through in the great circuit that we had here in Ireland. And they would collect soul records. A lot of the bands, you know, that were really hot at the time in America and England, the 45s used to come through, the sailors and the soldiers that would come on and they'd buy them off them in the record shops. So I was at home, I got my education in music. And then any time the bands would come, and the Drifters used to come all the time for some reason, and they used to come to the Rialto in Derry. And, like, you know, you're 8 years of age, and it's the first time I ever seen, other than the British soldiers, people that were black African Americans. And I thought I was black African-American because I grew up listening to so much soul. I thought, like, that's all I want to be when I grow up. And we were taken to the Rialto, and I think I was about 8. And the Drifters came down like this through the audience in blue, like powder blue velvet suits with glitter down the side and the afro and the glitter down there. And I was just like, that's what I want to be. And, you know, as a kid, and obviously the music, and it was Benny King and Charlie Brown. It was the original setup.
Wow.
And she just blew your mind, you know. And then Dickie Rock was the next thing we went to see, so...
One of these kids is not like the others.
But it was great. You know, so the show band, you know, I think when Derry was obviously, you know, very condensed for people look finding their own entertainment. So the soul and the jazz is great, you know, history of jazz music at Derry as well. So in the house, and then obviously I only felt what you're saying there about sort of jealousy or suppose inferiority and shock when I came to Dublin. When I came to Dublin when I was 16, the first time I came down, I did a first film I got, but I was 16. It was a director called Michael Winterbottom. And
he's amazing.
Great director, he's great guy. And I came down here to do the ADR at RTE, funny. And I met for the first time, Dave Wolmott was the actor, my other actor in it, and his sister, Siobhan, was going out with Glenn Hansard at the time. So I'm 16 and I meet people like Glenn and God of Mercy, Mick Christopher, and Ronan O'Snuddig and that whole tribe and Owen O'Brien, and start going to the Coffee Inn. And I mean, I was absolutely, it was like going to the moon for me, that they were so confident. They were out in the street playing guitars and they all sat around you and talk about Music Man.
They still are.
Still fucking are. So, do you know, it was that kind of a thing. It was just, it was that's when I felt, suppose, extreme lack of confidence about, you know, even being a singer, you know, so I think, and getting up there and standing in front of people. But it was an amazing... amazing introduction, and I'll, you know, I'm blessed to have.
When is your next gig?
Well, the next gig's actually in Derry. We're making a new record at the minute, and we'll be releasing it next February. But I work with the Foyle Hospice in Derry City. I'm their patron, and we scheduled this gig in, so we're going to play the Millennium Forum on the 26th of September, and all the proceeds go to the Foyle Hospice, and then we're going to play a gig in Fermanagh on the Saturday the 3rd.
Wow, good Lake Country. Well, as we say in the Free State, more power to you. Ladies and gentlemen, Brona Gallagher. We'll see you after the break. Thank you.
The Tommy Tiernan Show on 2FM.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I feel bad about slagging Ryan, Fred. I do. I'm an awful hooer for laughs. Like, and I paid the price of it. I'd be driving home on the motorway today back to Galway now, sweating bad blood out of me, and it might take a while to be healed. Do you ever get that? Do you ever have huge regrets over what comes out of your mouth?
Yeah, absolutely. All the time. Yeah. I got that girl's name on Facebook earlier on. I wish I never did it. And...
Now, we asked, we have a joke competition this week, and this is a very serious joke competition. It's very very interesting to find out how much people actually know about what's going on in the world. This week's question was, what's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? Well, you must be awful busy, lads, doing other stuff that you have no... What's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? None. I have no idea what goes on in either. What's the difference? Now, this is a beautiful one for more than one reason. This is probably, I don't know if the guy knew he's been this funny, but it's there's genius in this. What's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? One is a disaster zone, the other country is in Asia. It's like a Ryanair pilot. What's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? Half the women in Fine Gael should cover their heads with burqas like Syria. What's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? Syrian men are more attractive. What's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? Bashar al-Assad is better at hurling than Enda. There's a lot more going on in that joke than meets the eye first time round. What's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? There's more racial diversity in Syria. What's the difference between a Gael in Syria? ISIS skipped the political foreplay and go straight to the execution. 2FM on a Saturday at lunchtime, mighty. What's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? You pay less for water in Syria. But this is my favourite. What's the difference between Fine Gael and Syria? Syria has a bit of fight in it. Highly educated audience. So we're coming to the end. Fred, what are you at during the week?
Tomorrow I'm gigging at for the Galway Arts Festival at 1 o'clock in the King's Head. And then this weekend coming, I'm playing the Mighty Vodafone Comedy Festival. So you're all invited. Thanks. Right.
I'm at the Vodafone Comedy Festival as well during the week. And I'm very excited to be doing a gig with Maeve Higgins from New York and Panty. Yeah. We'll have some crack in the dressing room there, I'd say. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the show.